Welcome to Don't Give Up Space Cowboy, the podcast that always opens with the Queen's Gambit. My name is Jeremy Greer. I'm your host. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Chris Mosier. Chris, how are you today, my friend?
Yeehaw, partner. That's how I'm doing today. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm excited to get back to this. We've taken quite a bit of a break from this.
We sure have.
Doing some Witcher stuff, doing some Hunk stuff. But it was good to turn on, fire up the old Blu-ray player and stick this disc back in and get back into it. This show just like does stuff to me, like with the music starts and the animation. Oh, yeah. It just works for me real well.
So. You start getting that real folk blues.
Absolutely. So last time we ended an episode in the middle of a cliffhanger.
Good on us.
Chris, can you tell us exactly what was happening in that episode?
Oh, man. Okay, so I think last time everybody was up on the ship.
This is already going poorly.
So they have this ship, right? They're space bounty hunters, and they hang out on the ship called the Bebop. Anyway, so
I looking for a little bit more detail.
Faye had robbed the Bebop and taken off onto this planet, and this ice planet. And they were going to go look for her, or Jet was going to go look for her, because she stole the money because she wanted to be followed. On the planet, she runs into trouble. She runs into this guy named Gren, who she finds out is kind of tied up with Vicious, who was, you know, our antagonist from a few episodes ago. And this kind of strange web starts to unfold as a sort of despondent or depressed Faye kind of listens and catches up on what's been going on in this guy, Gren's life. Meanwhile, on this same planet, there is the code name Julia keeps coming up, and the name Julia means a lot to Spike. We don't quite get the full story yet, but he knows that this woman named Julia, who he was very close to in the past, is supposedly on this planet, or something having to do with her is on this planet. And what that ends up being is this, basically this drug deal between Vicious and Gren, and they're using the code name Julia. We end off with Spike actually getting shot by Lynn, who is a character who works for Vicious, or works in the same syndicate that Vicious currently works in, that Spike also used to work for. So there's a lot of complicated relationships going on here. But the last time we saw Spike, he had just taken a bullet in the chest, and that was it.
Yeah, this is and Spike really only
that
had
was involved. Not very concise. That wasn't as tight as it should have been.
Well, but I gave you no preparation on that one, so that's my fault. Spike gets involved because this drug deal that they're doing is codenamed. Is it Julia?
It's Julia.
Codenamed Julia, which he is. Is a figure in his past. We don't know exactly what. We've seen some flashbacks, but we don't really know anything about it. Before we jump to the main episode, I just want to say thank you to the people that are making this podcast possible. They've gone to patreon.com/monsterofthe week and pledged some bucks so that we do these. And we release these on a Patreon exclusive feed every single month, whether it's this or The Witcher or any of our user suggested things, our listener suggested episodes. So thank you everybody for having done that
thanks,
already.
Guys.
We are going to be covering Session 13, Jupiter Jazz Part 2. This aired on January 16th, 1999. It was written by Kiko Nobumoto. Spike wakes up after being tranquilized and looks for Vicious. Faye learns about from Glenn. Man, I am not podcast ready today, Chris.
It's one of those days.
Jesus Christ. This is that Thursday energy, man. Spike wakes up after being tranquilized and looks for Vicious. Faye learns from Gren about his past with Vicious. Everyone meets up for a confrontation involving a red eye deal.
Ooh.
So this picks up pretty much right where the other episode left off. The intro kind of spoiled it, but we thought that Spike was dead. But it turns out he's just been tranquilized. He's laying there and he kind of starts waking up, and he's struggling to wake up as this feather drifts down onto his body.
Yeah, it's a very evocative first shot. We see these birds kind of scattering up to the sky, and then the one single feather that lands on Spike's chest. And he's splayed out, like, arms and legs wide, laying on the white snow with this big puffy pink jacket. It's very silly, but very funny, or very serious at the same time. Mm-hmm. He kind of finally opens his eyes, and he realizes, like, oh, shit, I'm not dead. But this whole episode, it starts here, but this is about maybe, 3 minutes into the episode's runtime of the 22 minutes or however long the episode is, because if you take out the little short recap that they do, and then the episode or the episode intro, the song, and then the outro song, this really just feels like a cutoff from the last episode. It doesn't feel like it was supposed to be broken up into two parts, because most of the action seems like it happens in the first episode, and then this one is just like, all right, let's just get to the end now, which doesn't make it bad. It's just interesting watching it so many months apart now to kind of see, like, oh yeah, everything happened last episode, and this is just the result of all that stuff now.
Yeah.
So
the first thing that we're going to get, the first real meaty section is we go to Grin and Faye. The last time we left them, they were kind of in this weird standoff. Grin basically wants to know how he knows Vicious. So Grin kind of lays out the story. They were on Titan together. I'm assuming that's the Saturn's moon, is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. It's a moon.
It's a moon. I played Destiny. Okay. It's there somewhere.
Right.
And we get this flashback of a bunch of scenes of war and destruction. Mm-hmm. We see like skeletons still with uniforms on, holding guns that are buried in the sand. We see like all these planets in the sky. We see soldiers like playing cards, all this other stuff. And then we go to Vicious, who is sitting in a trench, like holding a music box, and it's playing this very specific song that I believe we've heard before. And
yeah.
Grin is sitting there next to him and says, "What song is this?" And he goes, "Its name's Julia."
This is interesting because it's this war torn, like hellish landscape. But I think this is really the only time that we see Grin expressing any kind of happiness. He's like weirdly very nostalgic for this time, and he says it himself. He went to join this war on Titan because he wanted comrades. Mm-hmm. And he says that he was attracted to that word, that he needed comrades. He felt he needed that. He was pulled in by that word and what it meant, the essence of it, which is kind of a lofty thing to just be hearing from this character, but that's why he went to war. He was clearly somebody who maybe felt very isolated, and he needed other people to rely on. And he went to this hellish place to get that. And of all the people that he could have found a comrade in, it happened to be Vicious, who shares with him this music box, says the song's called Julia. And yeah, he asks, "Hey, can I play that tune when I get back home on my saxophone?" You know,
which is a weird thing to ask, because you would just assume like you could do that. Like, it's a song. Right. Like, it's not,
now
presumably Vicious, it's not kinda copywritten.
right. Vicious kind of hesitates. I guess we don't really see any visible hesitation on him, but he doesn't right away do this. But after, you know, a pause, he hands Grin the music box. So, you know, symbolically just saying, like, "Yep, here you go. I'm passing this off to you." Like, there you go. Not even symbolically, literally he's doing that. But we don't get all the details of this music box, but there is something more to this. So in Gren's eyes, he just kind of got his comrade. He earned a friend right there. But to Vicious, he was basically handing over something that he was not supposed to have. There was something inside that music box. I don't exactly know what it is, but that's what ends up getting Grin in trouble those years later. Or when he tries to go home, he's seen as a spy. It's because of something in this music box, as far as I'm aware. I didn't pick up on it, you know, when I originally watched this, but it was something I was trying to piece together this time around. And of course, in typical Vicious fashion, even after he hands over this music box, which on its surface could almost be seen as a moment of like tenderness for Vicious, but he instantly like spins around and like pushes Grin's head aside and then stabs a scorpion, the old scorp that was crawling right beside him. And it's just very intense, violent move. And like, sure, he just saved his life, but it's all just very intense and very vicious, I guess.
No, pun absolutely intended. This just goes to show you that Vicious can't do anything like a normal person. Like, everything has to be with the flourish or with like some amount of flair or drama. Like, yeah. Handing over the music box.
He carries a katana and a bird.
Sure. So. Yeah. I mean, like, he's got issues, is what we're saying.
He's got a whole thing. Yeah.
We find out that eventually during this, Grin gets convicted of being a traitor somehow.
I just want to say, if Spike is like the epitome of like a chill guy, you know, he wears his leisure suit, he smokes cigarettes, easy come, easy go, whatever happens, happens. Vicious is the exact opposite, because again, he carries a katana and a fucking
and a bird. Absolutely, yeah.
He's the least chill dude of all time.
So Grin gets convicted of being a traitor. He goes to jail, and then while he's in jail, he takes an experimental drug that causes all of his hormones that get out of whack. We saw this in the last episode when Faye finds him in the shower, that he's got a very womanly figure. He's got breasts, and that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's explained here, and I'm glad it is. Like, I'm glad this is just like, oh, hey, this happened, and not like some weird, like, I don't want to get into that territory at all.
It's not a weird gag or anything
exactly,
like that. It's
yeah.
like
it's actually Faye something very serious. Him. Yeah,
yeah. And Faye is just shocked to see him, and then he's even like, "Yeah, when I was convicted as a spy when I came home from war, and what I found out was that Vicious is the one who testified against me. And when I found that out, you know, we don't know what Gren's past was before this, but if he was going to hell." To find friends, you know, his life couldn't have been great. So to find out that maybe his only friend, this guy Vicious, who he's formed an attachment to find out that he's the one who betrayed you and testified against you, Gren just kind of lost his shit. And so, yeah, he started taking this experimental drug. I don't know if it was supposed to be something that, like, calms you down. It was an experimental drug being used on prisoners. But, yeah, it became highly addictive, and it threw his hormones all out of whack. So it's not only that. He's lost all of his friends. He's addicted to a drug. He was convicted of being a spy, wrongfully convicted. And now his body is different than how he originally had it. And it's his whole life is just tipped upside down.
And he tells Faye that the reason that he's trying to get in touch with Vicious, the reason that he's trying to do this drug deal is because he wants to talk to Vicious and find out if he was framed. He tells Faye this right now. And he also, like, Faye is like, "What are you crazy? That dude's a killer. He's going to kill you." And he's like, "Oh, I'm not scared of being killed by Vicious whatsoever." Faye says, like, why am I here? Like, why did you bring me back? And Gren has this kind of sense of loneliness about him, like you just mentioned. And it's mm-hmm. he says, like, "Well, I don't really know. Like, maybe just because I wanted the company. I wanted someone to talk to." And Faye responds by pulling her gun and starting to shoot at Gren, which I didn't quite understand what's going through Faye's mind. I think she's in danger of some sort.
I think Faye reacts very powerfully to things, and I think that her actions don't always betray her emotions necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, she runs away because she's acting like she's done with the Bebop, but she also stole what very little money they have because she knows that they'll come after her, which is what she wants. And she fires her gun at Gren, but did she want to hurt him? Was she going to intentionally miss? Like, we don't really know what Faye's actions say about how she feels. I liked her line to him about, "You just help someone selfishly and then bring them home, and then you just go off to die." It's like, even in this moment where Faye is almost reflecting some of what Gren is talking about, searching for friends, searching for comrades, Faye is kind of in that same boat. She's somebody who has found comrades, but just can't allow herself to stick with them. Something in her always makes her run away or push people away. Mm-hmm. And even here, it's like some new guy has saved her and brought her home with him, but now he's just like, "Okay, yeah, I brought you home just before I'm about to go perhaps meet my death." So she's frustrated by all of this, and firing her gun, I guess, is her way of showing that.
Sure, yeah, which makes sense. I can see that. From here, we move over to Jet, who is at the...
I guess it's Gren overpowers her at some point. It's like off camera, kind of.
Oh, yeah, and yeah. That kind of just resolves. Yeah. Jet is at the bar where we previously saw Gren playing. The bartender kind of confirms with him that he saw Faye, and also tells him, like, she was sitting right there on that stool, and that's where Julia used to sit, on that same stool. She would come in every night.
There are no women on this planet, so it's a big deal every time you see one.
Yeah, especially if you have, like, you know, dramatically gorgeous women like Julia and Faye are represented to be. Then we go over to Spike, who has this... as he's waking up from being tranquilized, he has this dream sequence, and we see just a whole lot of, like, confusing and random imagery. We've got guns, we've got roses, we've got axles, we've got slashes. No, I'm kidding. Lots of guns, lots of roses. There's Julia there. There's, like, this weird kind of narration happening where my left eye can see the past and things like that, which sounds like something out of a David Lynch movie. Mm-hmm. So all of this is pretty strange.
Some of this we've seen before. There's, like, Spike and Vicious fighting back to back. There's Spike saying, like, "When this is all over, like, run away with me, leave this life with me." Presumably he's speaking to Julia. There's Vicious saying something about something personal to her as well. I can't quite remember what it is. We hear Spike saying, "It's like I was watching a dream." He says that to Vicious in episode 5. He says, "It's like I'm watching a dream that I could never wake up from." We hear in this voiceover, we hear Julia say those same words to him. "It's like I was watching a dream." And we hear Spike say, like you said, "My left eye sees the past." And then we hear Julia ask, "And what about your right eye?" And there's just a whole lot of shit. And then he wakes up, right?
Yeah, he wakes up immediately, digs into his. He can barely move. He gets his arms moving just enough so that he can light up a cigarette, which is very much appreciated because Spike has to be cool at all times, and cigarettes, yeah. kids at home are very cool.
Right.
Jet runs into the guy that in the last episode, Faye kind of had a run in with this dude yeah. and his crew that were going to try to
shut
her down.
Spike had a run in with them too. So Spike, this guy's been beaten up twice now. And now the third member of the Bebop finds him.
And Jet is just being super nice and is like, hey man, like I'm looking for directions to the hotel with the blue door, I think is what it is. And this guy is just like freaking out, like, no, I'm not going to do anything.
He's like, I'm
just tired of it.
Directions, man.
And you know, this takes Jet up back a little bit, and this dude like runs out into traffic and immediately gets hit by a trash truck. So like the most tragic figure on Cowboy Bebop so far was this poor dude that got beat up by two-thirds of our team and then ran away from the third one into the waiting grill of a trash truck, which I thought yeah. was really hilarious. Luckily, he finds the door. The hotel was right across the street that he was looking for. So Jet just continues on, finds Faye, who has been tied up. Grin left her to, and tied her up and left her.
Yeah. When Jet runs in and he finds her, so she's almost in like a, she's, you know, sexualized here because the way she's kind of like bent over, like they're doing it on purpose, the way that it's lit. And, but Jet, when he comes in, he even said, like, he makes a remark about, like, I didn't realize he was that type of guy. And she says something dramatic to the effect of, you know, he's not like anyone. But Jet actually does seem concerned when he first comes in, when he finds Faye, because Jet's, you know, he's Papa Bear and he's worried about his kids. He's worried about the two dumbest, brattiest people he's ever met in his life, who are his children. Also Ed, but Ed, you know, Ed's insane, but she's really not a problem.
And she's on the Bebop, like she yeah. takes care of herself for the most part.
We see one scene of Ed, and it's her making a line of food in front of Ayn, just being like, "When are you guys coming back?
I'm so bored here." So Spike tries to figure out what's going on, and has like all of these thoughts about Julia, because he still doesn't realize that Julia was, even though she was here at one time, that Grin was just basically using the name Julia as bait to get Vicious involved, and Spike just happened to get in the mix. There's some real good music playing around this
point.
The
song's called Words That We Couldn't Say, and as he's just, Spike is flying around, I guess he's going to meet up with Vicious or find where Vicious is, and the song is playing, and Words That We Couldn't Say seems pretty evocative considering we just had this intense flashback, like, montage, you know, this jarbled kind of, my left eye sees this, and she asks what his right eye sees, but he doesn't finish it. So the flashback ends with an unfinished sentence, and then we have the song Words That We Couldn't Say. It's all very nostalgic. It's all kind of bittersweet, like reaching back into this past that they all can't quite reach.
Grin and Vicious communicate on the phone with each other, and they make a plan to meet up so they can exchange the drugs for the money. Grin says, hey, I'm not going to show up in person. I'm not that stupid. I'm going to send a woman instead. Jet and Faye are together, and they keep trying to figure out who Julia is because they have no idea. We get a brief scene, like you mentioned, of Ed lining up food for Ayn and like demanding souvenirs from this planet because she is incredibly intelligent and super bored. She's like me when they accidentally put me in like remedial math class for a day, and I was like, "Excuse me, I know how to do this. This is real easy." Yeah. So Grin, this is kind of the climactic part of the episode. Grin is dressed up like a woman, and he's because his hormones are out of whack. He's, you know, he looks like a woman. He meets with Vicious.
He looks like a woman, so he knows that he'll be disguised, basically.
They test the drugs. The drugs seem real. They slide the money over. And at this point, Grin sees this as an opportunity. And so he tells Vicious, like, hey, you're the one that saved me from that scorpion, and then you betrayed me. And he kicks the drugs over, and of course, he planted a bomb in this drug case, and it explodes. And then from far away, Spike sees this and immediately realizes, oh, yeah, if there's shit exploding anywhere, Vicious is involved in some way, shape, or form. So I'm going to make a beeline over there.
So what we learn is that inside the music box, there was a solar transmitter. Julia, when she came to this planet, she told Grin about that because she must have heard the tune or, you know, something. They connected. He was playing the song on saxophone. So basically, I think she's the one who's like, yeah, him giving you this mark of companionship in your eyes was actually the thing that fucked you over. Which I don't know if it's supposed to say some greater thing, you know, friends will only let you down, something like that.
Sure, yeah.
But here, this is Grin, like, even as bombs are going off and guns are being fired, just sort of being like, we were comrades. How that was something to believe in. Why are you fucking like this, Vicious? And Vicious being very emo, being very chill. Extremely unchill. I can't even believe I would say that. He says something along the lines of, like, there is nothing to believe in. Like, there's absolutely nothing to believe in. And even as Lin, who shot Spike last episode with the tranquilizer, he gets shot. He goes down.
Yeah.
But even that's happening,
he saves Vicious.
Yeah. And even as that's happening, Vicious still says there is nothing in this world to believe in. And now this is kind of when Spike sort of flies in as Vicious is getting in his ship to take off, and a dogfight ensues.
Yeah, so we've got Grin in a ship being chased by Vicious, who is now being chased by Spike. Spike still has really no idea of the situation that he's got himself into. this, as we talk about a lot, like the animation and stuff in this is just absolutely brilliant. Like they're shooting missiles at each other. It's, you know, they're kind of bouncing back and forth. I really like the dogfights in this show. They're really good. Yeah. Apparently, I was reading this in the trivia section. This came out so close to 9/11 that they cut some stuff on Adult Swim. So like some missiles hitting some buildings were cut at the last minute just to not.
Oh wow!
I guess and you know mess with the masses or what have you.
I mean it makes sense, I guess.
But Vicious manages to hit Grin with one missile, but Spike shoots the second one down. Then Vicious starts shooting missiles at Spike, and then he basically gets away from those. One hits a building, he shoots the other one down. So basically, it's just a huge dogfight between these three people. Mm-hmm. But the music box that's in the bag of drugs that I think Grin has, because Grin kept the drugs. Mm-hmm. Do I have that right?
Vicious hears the music box.
That's what it is.
It explodes, and I think like one of his, like part of his ship kind of blows up, but Vicious is able to get back to his mothership, effectively. He's able to get back to what I assume is like the syndicate's like main ship. Because
but
that's,
and that's right, yeah.
Escape.
So he gets away, but Grin, like, because he got
Grin
shot
was
by that
shot
missile.
Down.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's where I was getting confused. Pardon me, listeners. It's been like a week and a half since I watched this episode, so I don't have it sharp like I usually do. Spike finally catches up with Grin while he's on the ground, and it's like, "Where's Julia? What's happening?" Grin is extremely injured. He starts coughing up blood,
right.
And he's
and,
like,
and right here, this song starts to play, which is the original tune to Julia, or Goodnight Julia, I think it's called in the soundtrack, but it leads into this much longer track. It's like a 7-minute song called Space Lion that plays from now until the episode finishes. It just starts here. So it's very dramatic that way.
It's because Cowboy Bebop, if anytime Vicious is involved, it's going to be overly dramatic, man.
Mm-hmm.
He begs him to he begs Spike to put Grin back on the ship so that he can get away. But as they're talking, Grin realizes that this is Spike, and he knows Spike because of his relationship with Julia. Julia described him often.
Yeah. And said she was always talking about you, and mm-hmm. she's always said that you had different colored eyes. And she said you get a strange feeling if you keep looking into those eyes. And this is, we get like a close up on Spike's face as he's looking at Grin. And I like that his different colored eyes aren't like one's red and one's green or something like that. You know, it's like one is brown and one is a slightly different shade of brown, which is something you would only notice if you're like looking into somebody's eyes. It's not like a defining characteristic, but and even in the anime, it's not that easy to tell. It could just be shading, but it is, you know, that's what it is. His eyes are slightly different colors, and there's a reason for that. But what Grin wanted here was to be, you know, put back in the ship, be on his way to Titan, to the place where his life had meaning, where he felt that he had comrades, where he had friends, where he wasn't alone. He knows he's not going to make it there, but he wants to die on his way there. However, he doesn't make it that long.
Yeah, Jet puts him on. Excuse me, Spike puts him on the thing and sends him out, but he doesn't last very long. Spike goes back to Jet, who, you know, in the previous episode said that, you know, you're not welcome on the ship anymore. They're past that now, so Jet lets him back on the ship. Faye is reading a magazine and like kind of pondering out loud who Julia is while Ed paints her toenails on the Technicolor dream coat toenail treatment.
This scene is it's some stuff going on here because, you know, Faye seems really sad and she mm-hmm. sighs when she says Julia, and Ed asks where they went, and Faye says someplace very good, which I expected her to say, you know, someplace very bad, because mm-hmm. she seems like she's really bummed out now. And Ed says, how come Edward got left out? And she says, I'll tell you about it someday. And I like that Ed is like, yeah, it's all right.
I'm good. And I don't really need you to. Ed is such the best character on this show, man. She's so good. And
she's painting Faye's toenails, like you said, and then she's painting her toenail blue. And the last line we get from Faye in this episode is, oh, Ed, anything but blue. One of those very very jazzy, cool guy lines.
Very film noir. No, anything but blue, please. Right. You know, blue makes me sad or whatever. Yeah.
I really like that kind of line. I like that turn of phrase kind of thing. It just works for me.
It works really well. At the end of this episode, we go back to the beginning of the first part where we have these kind of American Indian stereotypes who are watching the stars. There's an old man and his grandson or some young child. I don't even remember if it was a boy or girl now.
I think this is how the first episode started.
It is.
I think
it was
them doing that. Yeah. So it's kind of going back to that, and they're discussing this like falling star and the poor lost soul, the soul of a warrior who, you know, couldn't find his way to the great beyond, whatever it is.
A warrior with a pitiful soul who could not find his way to the lofty realm.
Yeah. But that's where, and I suppose that's supposed to be Gren.
Yes.
This pitiful soul. And this is different than, you know, we don't get the real folk blues. Obviously, listener, you already got my rendition of it earlier in this episode. It just kind of pans up to the starry sky, and this song that has been playing this whole time continues to play and continues to build. And then we just get like a full credits roll, which makes this two-parter seem even more like it was supposed to just be like one 50-minute episode that they had to just – it's like a movie. It's a mini movie, really.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. These two episodes together, I think, are really strong. They're continually pulling apart our core team and then putting them back together in interesting ways, and it's very much like I wouldn't have expected, and this is kind of my own bias, but I just wouldn't have expected this level of depth in their character development in the show. Like, I just wasn't going to expect that at all. Spike kind of being aloof, but obviously Julia is a way straight to his heart. Anytime Julia is mentioned, he kind of freaks out. Faye's obvious care and empathy for her fellow, you know, compatriots, but also this weird kind of fear of beginning to get close to them. They've laid out some of the stuff
fear
in the past.
Of getting close to them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she has this kind of overwhelming loneliness that it's now seeming to come to the forefront. Like, the closer she gets to them, the lonelier she feels.
Yeah, this is good stuff. I like this.
Faye has become like my favorite character this time around. I think she's a lot more interesting than I gave her credit for when I was younger. Cause Spike is the cool guy. He's your lead, and he's the one that a young man definitely wants to kind of analyze and understand. And, I think Faye's actions are just so interesting, and she's such a contradiction of herself, and there's so many layers to Faye that it's a pleasant surprise to kind of be able to unravel that onion, to use Spike's words.
Yeah, it's she's really cool. Like, I don't know what's going on with Spike. Like, we know some history with Jet, but we don't really know a lot of Faye's history besides some criminal activity. And in session 15, which we'll be covering on the next episode of this podcast, they imply that there was going to be some history to Faye there, so I'm really eager to get involved in that. In the meantime, do you want to jump into the next episode?
Yeah, let's do it. Oh, the end title card for this episode.
Yeah. Don't give up Space Comrade. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Don't give up Space Comrade. Yeah, it's not often that we get something that isn't See You Space Cowboy, so I always want to point it out when we do get something different.
We couldn't see them, so now we just pray them. Words that we couldn't say.
So the next episode we're going to be covering is Session 14, Bohemian Rhapsody. January 23rd, 1999, it came out, written by Adai Soto. Spike, Faye, and Jet captured 20 thugs involved in hijacking Astral Gates, but none of them was the mastermind with the 12 million Wulong bounty on their head. The only clue that they have is an e-chess piece that Ed uses to play a game against a cyber opponent over the net. Chessmaster Hex. Chessmaster Hex, by the way, extreme Dark Souls name.
That's so good. It's so good.
Final sentence, but are Spike, Faye, and Jet just pawns themselves in the Chess Masters game? I like this. This is kind of the bounty of the week that I really enjoy. There's some interesting character work. There's some real fun animation stuff, and there's some real fun, like, spooky, scary exploring a space station, and then it gets real goofy. So I'm kind of here for this, and just in general.
Yeah, this is a fun episode. I'm glad that Ed gets a little chance to shine. I mean, she's actually still not in all the episode, but I also love the intro to this episode that is Spike punching a guy, Faye like sneaking up and like shocking somebody with like fake lipstick, and then Jet with a fucking net gun, launching it at like six guys on an escalator.
Oh, so fucking good. And gets them all. And then we see like a brief frame of some weird chessboard. And then we go back to the Bebop where Ed and Ayn are chilling out. And she says, well, how did it go? And they found out that they captured all 20 of these bounties. And they all found these weird chess pieces. And then, but we don't, they all look upset. Like, they're all kind of yelling over one another while they're talking about this. And we don't quite know why yet. We go to this kind of high rise, this really fancy building on a planet with full of glass walls and the whole nine. This CEO guy, we're going to find out this is the company that makes all the Astral Gates. And he's like the kind of in charge of all of them. He's complaining because people are sending literal like paper complaints to him. And the reason they're doing that is because they've been sending so many electronic complaints that took the servers down. So he's had a lot of problems.
Yeah. Basically, they're looking for somebody who has been hacking the gates, who has been causing some real trouble, some real riffraff. And all of these people that were caught by the Bebop crew, these are all like the small fry. They're all working for this chess master. But consequently, there's no price on any of their heads and they aren't worth anything. So it was a lot of wasted effort that got them. I mean, they did get them a little closer to the end goal, but they don't know that yet. So they're a little bit frustrated. They haven't caught this, you know, this head hacker, and they don't really know what the hell they're doing.
And the big shot, we get our big shot kind of clip where the, you know, our animated Bart, like, you know, I don't even know what to call it. Like your annual newscast of what's happening with in the world of bounties. They explain this. They explain that, like, oh, you captured all these people, but if you don't get the mastermind behind it, you don't actually collect any of the money. So yeah, they're a little pissed off.
Yeah. This is where Faye suggests that they should all team up and split the reward. And Jet's like, whoa, weren't you the one who said that we like every man for himself? Like, come on, Faye.
Yeah, we absolutely should not do anything like that. We go back to, just briefly, we see the chessboard when we see some old person kind of moving some pieces around. This next scene is the first thing that I've ever wanted to refer to as space ska, because Jet is going to narrate kind of his side of this. He found out what they actually did, so we see it happen as it's being narrated. Essentially, these kind of minor criminals managed to hack one of the gates so that they could take over the toll. So every time you pass through these gates, you have to pay the company money to be able to approach the planet safely. They figured out a way to, you know, not only redirect the funds, but redirect all of the money out of someone's credit card or credit account into their own funds. And they laundered it through like a series of very complicated transaction processes that hid the sources of it. As all of this is happening, like as we're seeing guys like hack open the side of this gate, as Jed is explaining it very seriously, there's just some fucking space ska playing over it, dude. Like, there's just it's fucking great. Like, I was like, what the hell is this? I love this.
A little bit of space ska. What is it called when they when you dance this, because it's skanking? A little bit of space
a little space skanky. Hell yeah, I love it. They also find out, Jet also found out, that there's no commonality in any of these hooligans. They're all
these dudes, like, it's like a mail order hacking manual is like how they got into
Faye's contribution. And she's like, oh yeah, the dude that I captured had, you know, and she has a flyer for this thing, and she's like, I guess it's really hard being a criminal now, so like you can do shortcuts. And it's like 30,000 Yulongs to be able to figure out how to do this.
Yeah. Spike starts to think it must be somebody who works for the Gate organization, for the Astral Gate organization. It has to be an insider if it's this kind of level of tomfoolery. And meanwhile, while, you know, they're kind of, he's doing the Sam Winchester thing. He's looking for lore. He's really digging into that space lore.
Hitting
the local churches, talking to local historians. He's digging around in the old library. Ed is fiddling around with what I thought was their computer, but I guess it's like a digital chessboard. And she gets electrocuted. And then Faye is just to be like, oh no, is she dead?
And I just want to call this out too, because this entire time, like we've mentioned it before, that Ed is probably like the most quote unquote animated character in this anime character, I should say. And she's just so over the top in her reactions and everything. It's such a stark contrast compared to how serious the other three are at just about all times. She's definitely acting like kind of the comedy relief. Like when she gets electrocuted, her arms start waving all over the place, and it's very funny and kind of cute. Luckily she didn't die. She just comes back to life and like continues her work, which I thought was really dope.
Yeah. But she starts to, she starts to play chess. It's time to do some e-chess, as they call it.
E-chess, yeah. Ed tells them that those pieces were used to play like remotely against players, which, yeah, if you think about it, like how we play online games nowadays seems like the most comfort. Like, hey, let me buy this Mario amiibo so that you and I can play a Mario game together. Of course, that's probably what Nintendo is doing right now. Hold on, let me take that back.
But yeah, they're memory chips, and they're like for games of chess. Yes. So with this piece with this memory chip, she's able to kind of like plug it in and then start playing this game that with this man, this we're gonna find out shortly, that she, the old man we saw alone in the room playing chess earlier, is the person that Ed is playing with now.
And Jet says, okay, well, I'm gonna go try the Gate Corporation again, let me try to do this. He manages to get in the room with the CEO. It's notable that he recognizes one of the security guys on his way up to the elevator.
I would say it's like another bounty hunter who was there.
It's another bounty hunter. Okay, that's what it was. Once he gets in the room with the CEO, he lights a cigarette. Of course, they tell him to put it out, so he just throws it off into a plant. And Jet kind of takes an aggressive position and is like, hey, you're using us bounty hunters as pawns. You know exactly who this is, and you're just trying to cover it up. That's why nobody's going to be able to find out the mastermind in all of this, because you're using this.
It's funny, because he's just fully bluffing, but he's like kind of right on the money.
Yeah, he's 100% correct. Yeah, but he doesn't even know that yet. Like, he's just kind of guessing to try to get a reaction. And of course, like he gets kicked out immediately. So he's downstairs, like waiting for his ship to be summoned. And we find out that the cigarette that he put out was actually a bug, so he can listen into the office. And sure enough, the CEO knows exactly who the mastermind is. It's a Chessmaster Hex, was a guy that they fired 30 years ago from the project that they've always been concerned about, because we'll find out a little bit later that he pointed out potential problems with the gates.
Yeah, but they went. And they did it anyway, and he's just angry about it.
We get kind of a montage scene set to some more like super good tunes, where Ed
some
and
more chess, space ska,
more space ska, where Ed and the Chessmaster Hex are playing chess together, and like I like this a lot. Like it's real goofy, and it doesn't really like it's not. I don't know. There's just something about them like tapping a square and like the piece materializing there. That's something kind of, I don't know. It's just fun and cool.
Yeah, I really like all that stuff. I didn't think I would be all that interested in that type of thing. But it's just fun, and it just shows how, I guess, smart Ed is, the way that her brain works. I mean, we know she's like a genius hacker, but just watching her play chess and really like enjoy doing it is just fun.
Spike and Faye are trying to analyze the chess pieces, but they can't really come up with anything. All they store is just, you know, a history of moves, essentially.
So I think what they're trying to track, well, they're going to try to track, not yet, the location of Chessmaster Hex through the chip, right? Or through the game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's got to be transmitting somewhere. Jet calls in and says, like, oh, hey, like, I got an ID on this dude. His name is Chessmaster Hex. And they try to get Ed to, like, hey, can you look this dude up and tell us all about him? And she's like, no, I'm too busy. I'm playing chess right now. And she does some sort of crazy move. And then Hex, who also keeps a bird on him, because that's where we are in space, in Cowboy Bebop right now, tells his bird, Loki, like, oh, this person is either completely stupid or a genius to make this kind of move. Like, he's been, like, cackling and laughing. Like, he's having the time of his life playing chess against Ed.
Time of his life. Yeah, she like almost checkmates him, but then realizes that that's not true. So she does something else, and he's just like, "Oh my god."
Meanwhile, Spike fills us in on the history of Chessmaster Hex.
Yeah, dug up that lore.
I keep wanting to say Hexmaster Flex, which also sounds very Dark Souls. I don't know what in my brain
that
is.
That should be your new Twitter name.
Hexmaster Flex, yeah. Weird flex, but okay. I was I got my first really good weird flex but okay joke off the other day because I was on something somewhere and this guy was talking about how he still plays Smash Brothers with his GameCube controller that he bought in 2001, and I was like, weird flex, man. Okay. Congratulations on using a 17-year-old GameCube controller to play a shitty fighting game. Yeah. Like, whatever, dude.
That's tight, bro. Sweet.
good job. So this dude started out at a really young age as being a programmer and engineer. He was super extremely smart. He built a lot of the gate technology, and then very early on he warned them that before they were going to launch these things, he was like, oh no, they've got these problems and it could potentially kill people. You gotta shut it down. So they just fired him and they just built them anyway because they were, you know, trying to get that money,
right? And so what he, like, out of revenge programmed in like a way to have people steal from them, I guess. He programmed their future ruin.
Yeah, we're gonna find out that a little bit later. I have some issues with that, like the way this goes out. But even then, like it's still kind of cool and interesting. They want Ed. They go back to Ed and they're like, Ed, we need your help. Like, and Faye even goes so far as to try to take the chessboard away from Ed, and Ed just turns into like a feral dog. It's like, no. And she says, oh, well, you don't need to do that because I'm playing chess with Chessmaster Hex right now. And of course, they're all surprised. They use that link to be able to track him down. So they actually are going to go to try to find this dude, capture him so that he can turn him in to get their 12 million oolongs.
Yeah. This is when they finally start, like, actually head out on location.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we see that the other bounty hunter, Jonathan, which is a weird name for
it's
a bounty
kind of funny, yeah.
Matt the Wizard, anyway.
Yeah.
Jonathan is following him because he was, you know, he kind of spied on Jet as he was overhearing all of the stuff through his cigarette bug. So he knew that, like, oh, if I follow this dude, I'll be able to slot right in. They go to this like floating scrapyard, and mm-hmm. There's basically no government here. Like, you can come here, you can do whatever you want to. It's, you know, free for all essentially, but it's off the grid.
It is a Bohemian Rhapsody.
It is a Bohemian Rhapsody, you might say. Okay.
But yeah, it's cool. It's just this abandoned scrapyard with like gate parts and wrecked ships that people just live inside of, which is pretty cool. But yeah, Spike and Faye, they fly out there, or Jet kind of like hangs back. He's trying to remind them that this could all be a big trap. I think we're kind of expecting something big and bad to happen, or at least the characters are. I don't know, as the audience, it's like, we know that this old man playing chess is Hex Master or whatever. But Spike is very blasé about all that. Whatever happens, happens, he says. And Spike and Faye both make their way inside. And this is where I think things start to get kind of fun and creepy and funny.
Absolutely. And then Jonathan shows up first and it's like, mm-hmm. oh, hey, like, I'm here. I'm going to blast my way into this. I'm going to let you know that ahead of time.
He has a score to settle with the chess master, apparently.
The cuts are going to come real quick and fast because Spike and Faye have both entered this space station, I guess is what we're going to call it. Like this.
Yeah,
this
might thing. As well. It's a haphazard space station that's sort of been like, it seems like it was pulled together by like random scraps of metal so that it just could hold oxygen inside. Because they get in there and they can see, like Faye even says, like, oh, I think there's oxygen in here. But they keep their suits on anyway.
Yeah, and they start exploring this place. We're cutting in between Ed's chess game with Hex, and that gets getting more and more intense, and both of them are starting to freak out. We start, both Faye and Spike start seeing a bunch of weird stuff. So there's a floating cat, then a dog floats by, Faye floats by like a... like just a bunch of weird homeless vagrants, like, dude. Because they have
tomatoes like growing out of the wall or something. All these zero G dogs, drunks, and they're just kind of like tripping out as they like float through here.
There's some hippies that offer to like smoke Faye out.
Space stoners,
space hippies smoking some space weed, which I think is very good. Finally, Spike and Faye blast in through two different doors at the same time into the room that Chessmaster Hex is in while he's still playing chess with Ed. Shortly afterwards, Jonathan blasts in, and Jonathan is there to get his money from Hex. He's got some sort of money that he needs that he either Hex stole from him or that he wants to collect the Wulongs for or whatever. And then our kind of cameo characters that show up almost every episode, these three dudes show up, and Hex is like, "Oh man, I'm having the best game I've played in years. This is fucking great. Like, but I could really use some lunch." And they're like, "You just ate a couple of minutes ago, man." He's like, "Oh, I did. I don't even remember that." Like, "Oh, you're starting to lose it, Hex." And sure enough, yeah, we find out, that he's, you know, senile, that he's, you know, he's losing kind of his ability to remember, or his short-term memory or what have you. Like he's not all there anymore. Jonathan's reaction to this is just to blast everything in the room, which is really strange and weird to me.
Yeah, he's just kind of losing his shit, but like nobody gets hurt. He's just blasts the place up. Yeah, he's crushed. He can't get his money back now. So eventually, Spike just like kicks the dude out of there, and
yep,
there's this weird side conflict that like never really becomes an actual problem. He's just sort of there. But then yes, Faye and Spike in this shocking turn of events, I guess, that they decide they can't turn this guy in. He's not himself anymore. It's just so very nice of them.
Yeah, it's so we find that out. They ask each other, like, what are we going to do with this guy? And then we cut over to Jet, who is back in the office of the gate company, and he tells them, like, hey,
Hexmaster Flex.
Yes, sorry. he tells him, like, look, this dude, you fired him almost, you know, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever. He laid out all of the groundwork for this. He wanted this to happen 50 years later, and then he lost his mind. He lost his faculty, so now he could turn senile. So he doesn't remember having set it all up, so you can't really do anything with him. So your problem is solved. He can't tell anybody anything. And, of course, the CEO is like, oh, okay, cool. And you know, Jet's like, but we can.
yeah. And then their one opportunity to ask for money, because they would definitely pay some hush money. Jet just says, you leave that old man alone, and that's it. Call off all the other bounty hunters, and we're even. Which is just about the nicest thing that these fellows have ever done.
It's extremely nice, and for a lot of work that they've put out, but you know, they have some sympathy for these kind of weird outcasts. And also, he says, you know, if we do something with Hex, we'll make Ed mad, because this is Ed's favorite chess player, favorite chess opponent. So yeah. And we do get one final scene of Jonathan, who is just now living on the scrapyard and just like smoking the biggest spliff I've ever seen in animated form.
Yeah. This guy's life is just, you know, it's gone down some paths, and I think things are gonna look up for him from now on. He's gonna live out here in this this bohemian place, and he's just gonna smoke that space weed and be fine.
And that's pretty much the episode. We I think we see one final scene of eventually they've been playing, like, Ed and Jet. No, excuse me.
It's been
me,
a
Ed
whole week,
and,
yeah.
Hex have been playing this game for a week, which completely trips Faye the fuck out. Yeah. So finally he gets the checkmate and closes his eyes. And I guess it's implied that he dies at this point. Like,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. That's really, really super sad. He just drifts off either way. Like, we see him drift off, and that's the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. I like this a lot. I think this episode is great. The idea that he like did this 50 years ago or whatever, is kind of ridiculous to me. Like, how we recruited these people, or like the flyers or whatever. Like, if you think about it with any kind of length of time, I think it falls apart, but I don't care, because setting up a trap for this company that you hate 30 years in the future, and then forgetting that it happened because you lost your mind is very sad and poignant, and like an interesting twist to a revenge story.
Definitely. Yeah. Even if like the logistics of it don't make a whole lot of sense, I think the moral of the story kind of hits that way. I don't know why. Whenever I think of revenge stories, I always think of The Count of Monte Cristo, which kind of like epitomizes that revenge story. But it's like you come back after like 20 years or however the hell long it's supposed to be in that. And then you find that everything is so different that extracting revenge becomes very complicated and very strained. And in that, you know, it all still pretty much follows through. But here it's just very interesting to see this. Your life is defined first by your great work and then your great anger. Like he wants so badly to get revenge on these people that he lives out in this bohemian society out in the middle of nowhere where he's free, so that maybe he can plot and set these things up. And, you know, we don't know, again, the details of all this stuff, but your life is defined by these certain things, and then in the end, none of it matters. In the end, he's an old man who loves chess, and the rest of it just sort of fades away. While even though the consequences are still sort of spinning around him, it is interesting. It's an interesting little vignette of a window into this strange little story.
It's really cool, yeah. And this is different than Supernatural, where I find most of the episodes that I like of Supernatural are the ones that are furthering the overarching plot. Like they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're lore episodes, I guess. For whatever reason with this show, like I almost like it, the relaxed tone. And when we don't get, like, I just like these like one-off like vignettes, like you said, like it's just like a short story in animated form that usually has some sort of twist or some sort of clinch at the end or some sort of emotional beat at the end that gets you in some way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is another example of that. And I just really like this episode. I'm really into it.
Yeah, same.
I do want to point out real quick, just because the trivia section mentioned it and I didn't know this and I wasn't smart enough to catch this despite being kind of a chess nerd when I was a little bit younger. The two games that are being shown, like with Chessmaster Hex versus the computer and then eventually versus Ed, are actually two famous matches from chess history, which I think is pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, like they were re-breaking those matches, which I thought was, that's a weird pull for anything. Like that's a weird amount of detail. Like I've seen, like, you know,
Bebop
chess represented.
Always has these weird, like, realistic details from stuff. And it's like, what year does this take place in? And why is it referencing a thing that I could know about?
It's so strange and so cool. I like it a lot though. I'm looking forward to the next episode too. The preview on this was Faye and kind of telling this, like, oh, it's all about love. It's all about true love. While Spike and Jed are like, what? That's definitely not true. I think Jed even says, you definitely can't trust the previews on this one. So I'm pretty excited about session 15 when we get to it.
Yeah, same. I always really like that episode, so hopefully I like it this time as well.
Do you want to wrap up? You want to get out of here?
Yeah, let's close this ship up.
So thank you for everybody listening. We very much appreciate it. Thank you to Two Mellow Makes for our intro and outro theme. It's super cool. I believe that's twomellow@bandcamp.com or something like that. You can find it. Two Mellow Makes is really easy to find. He's got YouTubes and everything. Shout out to Vodka Foley BB. I don't remember if we've recorded since we actually got the art out. So I don't know if I've shouted her out before, but she was the one that has done our art. If you follow me on Twitter or you talk to me on Discord, that's where my avatar is from. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Just search Vodka Foley BB. You can find her Tumblr and Twitter and all of that. Chris, where can people find you?
You can find me at Local Bones on Twitter.
And I am at JG Greer. Thank you especially to the patrons at patreon.com/monsterthe week that made all of this happen. If you want to talk to the podcast for any reason, at MOTWcast. If you want more episodes of me and Chris talking shit about just about anything, monsterthe week.cool is the place to be. And we'll be back next time, everybody, with sessions 15 and 16.